City Council Member Cassie McClure, who is also a published author. Congratulations for
That's
that.
Right. Thank you.
Your column, My So-Called Millennial Life, started on the features pages of the Sun News.
2016.
It's been
10 years at this point that I've been doing this. Yeah.
And I was back there at that time. So let's just start with the name, My So-Called Millennial Life.
Well, you know, this was when Lucas was still there, and they had lost their youth writer. So they had someone who had been writing, as I understand it, from when she was like 13, 14, and then she went to college and couldn't do it anymore. So he looked around. Lucas, the editor at the time, Pierman, was looking around. Who else is in the sort of stable that we can kind of pull out? And yeah, I remember him talking to me saying, "You're young." Thank you. And also slightly opinionated. I was doing food reviews at the time.
Right.
And
Well, weren't you also doing city stuff with Suzanne Michaels, or was that somebody?
That was later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was actually writing for utilities. So I try not to have that bias, but I do love utilities. They do a lot of things, unseen things that you know, I liked reporting on and telling those stories, because a lot of times, you know, the people who are fixing your pipes are your neighbors. They are also concerned in the same ways about things.
So. Anyway, that was a divergence.
It's going to veer into these things.
So what starting out, what did you want to express? What were you hoping to get out of it when you very first started it?
So that was kind of undefined when I started, to be real honest. It was a mandate to talk about the experience of living here, to talk about the millennial experience, right? We were, you know, vilified and, you know, and also put on pedestals to a certain degree. But what did that mean? So after I'd written for a while and people would say, "Wow, you make me understand my kids a little bit better." That's kind of an honor, you know, where it says, okay, you need to just go in and take your resume and shake a person's hand. And that's not how that works to a large degree anymore. How do we translate what our current reality is to people who have a different idea of how we should be operating in this world? So, which is a kind of a universal, I feel like, at this point, right?
And how long did you write that weekly column for?
It was when I started, every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks.
And that was way nicer, let me tell you, because every week is...
It's a lot.
It's a lot. When I hear people say, "Oh, I want to do that." Do you want to do that?
Some weeks are way easier than
others. Some weeks are way easier, right? The flow state hits you and it's great. Other weeks, you know, the deadline is like, oh,
I got nothing.
What should I write about?
I know.
Which is usually where my friends get all the texts, like my husband, to a large degree. Or I'm like, "What should I write about?"
Yeah.
And then you get days where, you know, you have national news sneak in that affects you, right? Looking at a little boy getting arrested for, you know, what do you say to that, right? How do you have that conversation with your own kids to say, "This is the experience that I never thought I'd have to share with you." That's unfortunate. And it's been a growing experience. You know, as I was prepping last night, nobody at the library hears that, for my talk today, realizing how different the world was when I started writing and how it is now. And how much I was a different person to a certain degree, too. You know, I very much cling to hope and change. I was an Obama girl, right? Try to stay.
Great motto, hope and change.
Yeah, you know, try to stay with optimism. But darn, it's a little hard some days to stay with that, right? To keep that as your sort of North Star.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually what I wanted to ask you about. Like you said, 10 years ago. So
a lot has happened.
Right. So many changes have taken place. And so, what do you, and when you look back, right, and you're compiling, you compile those columns, what has changed over time that you can see that's sort of standing out?
Well, let me give you a little context, though, too. I didn't have to compile. This was already something, so I write for a syndicate, and they in the midst of me campaigning for this position, said, "Hey, would you like us to put a book together?" And I said, "Right now, of all times." And they actually handled a lot of that, putting the themes together. I was looking at it too. One of them, the themes is Generation Y, but like parentheses W H parentheses Y, and I'm like, eye roll. I'm not sure I would have chose that. But on one hand, they kind of took that out of my hands because how hard would that have been to select your favorites, right? How have I changed? Like, my kids are a different age. We went through a global pandemic, constant change in the political sphere, me entering the political sphere, gross, right? Whoa, that's a difference. How do you kind of navigate those changes, right? With what's happening in the world, making it local, but like at the kitchen table too, you know?
We should let people know about the event you have coming up today.
That's right. Sorry, I meant to come in last week, but I couldn't make it. I'm on a zillion boards, and it wasn't just
there. You go.
I know. And then you walk into one, they're like, "You want to be chair?" No. No, I don't, but I am on a couple of those. So, but today's event is going to be at the Brannigan Library at 1:30. It's an author talk. I like that you guys announced it as my new book, but this actually got published in 2023.
Oh, wow.
I just haven't done any. Yeah. I've been busy.
Okay. Right.
So this is when they've wrangled me into doing an author talk at the library.
Okay.
So I vaguely know how that's going to go. I hope people have questions. If not, it's going to be me and a couple of people I know talking about stuff. I'm talking about daily life, I guess.
Are there one or two columns that are your favorites that you look forward to being able to share?
I can't say that I have any favorites. As I'm flipping through, I go, "Oh yeah, that's good. Oh, I wrote that." That's one of those weird experiences. When they printed it, I got instead of like you think of getting that actual book in your hands, it was like an Amazon delivery that I got. So I opened it, I filmed it, and it's just one of those weird things where it's like, "Wow, you did all of this work over time." You know, it adds up. And this is not to veer into another topic, but I taught for a little bit at NMSU, and one of the best things I did was get people to understand that everyone writes. So I would get the kiddos to write in the mornings, and when they would find a stack of papers, I'd hand it back because I'll get to grading. But when I'd hand them a stack back, they'd pick it up and go, "Gosh, I am a writer." Everyone should have that experience, and I believe everyone can have that experience. Everyone has a story. So, Miranda.
Yeah. And so how, well, I guess you don't write the art column anymore, but.
I do.
Oh, you do?
Every week.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize. Okay.
It's just they don't run it locally anymore because.
Oh, I see.
I would say not conflict of interest, but what is it? The giving a fair shake to, that would give me an outlet to write and say things. I don't typically write too much about the city work that I do. I do talk about what it means to be a counselor, what being in an elected position does, and what it can do, talking about maybe guiding people toward advocacy in better ways. That's as much, but I'm not going to say like, "Hey, you know what? Drainage ponds."
Right.
Right. It's always been kind of a universal column, right? That wasn't specific to any location or...
No, and that's what's made it hard. But that universalness is what I think kind of made people want to read it to a certain degree. Because
I think so, yeah.
It wasn't necessarily something where it was this or in this location. You know, I'll drop in because I do write, run in the Pacific Northwest. So whenever they hear things about the desert, that's inconceivable to them, right? So, sometimes I get letters from readers who go, "Gosh, I remember taking a tour of the Southwest. That must be so amazing."
Right. So where are you published?
I'm not 100% sure. Once I get emails from readers, that's when I always investigate. Okay. So I keep popping up in weird places. I'm like, how did that happen? Where are you reading me? Sometimes it's online, Pacific Northwest to a large degree. I'm running in Clovis, New Mexico, too, at this point still.
If people wanted to follow it, where would they go online?
So creators.org. I should know this off the top of my head. But creators and just my name, and I'll come up. So
Okay.
It's a whole syndicate.
Yeah. So I guess I wanted, my question was, because I thought maybe you weren't writing, but you are writing. Are there any specific themes or, I mean, 2025 must have given you a lot of content write about.
You know, I don't know if there's themes, but wrangling that hope, right? How do you retain sort of the, and some, like you, Walt just said too, sometimes you got nothing. Like, how do you respond to things? Yeah. And there's people who are super eager. They've already plotted out how this could have gone, right? And then they put their, you know, 600-word think piece up there before you can even really digest some of these things that, how is our world working like that? And I don't think it's an easy thing. So sometimes when it publishes and something crazy has happened, and then some, my sort of like navel gazing publishes, I feel like,
yeah, it's, like, it's challenging to write an apolitical column at a time when so much of our life is just dominated by politics,
right?
Every aspect, schools, churches, right. I mean, everywhere.
And I think you can't stay necessarily apolitical to a large degree. I think you have to say, hey, I'm not a big fan of guns, you know. What does that look like within the system that we inhabit, right? Yeah. I think a lot of the conversation that I'm having with myself, in because I am having that conversation essentially live with myself, is to say, how do we change the system, right? But we do inhabit the system. Yes, we can try to burn it down, but we're still inside that house, you know? How do we remodel the bathroom if we don't like the bathroom? And I know that's sort of a weird metaphor of change, but we can't tear it all down. We have to figure out fundamental ways of making change better for all of us that are living in the house. So that's the conversation back and forth, trying not to lean too cynical sometimes, but not to be too Pollyanna about it too.
So talk a little bit about your decision to run for city council and what that experience has been like.
Dreadful. I would not recommend. Politics is gross. I would say that, not to be flip, but it would have made a good chapter in a book, right? I'm always down for new experiences. And I think what I've told people, too, is that it's been an education. A four-year degree you can't buy anywhere, right? It's been hard in trying to navigate constituencies. There's different types of constituencies. I don't believe you just adhere to one, right? You have to listen a bunch of different people. And some of those situations are kind of gross, just to be real. You know, that's I was listening to you guys in the car. I was saying, too, before I walked in here. And I was thinking as I was driving, you know, how do you navigate like that humanity, right? When people are so angry, right? I remember having a conversation not too long ago where, you know, I trotted out a phrase I had heard and I really liked from somebody who said, you can't help somebody if they're dead. And they replied with, I don't care. Okay. That's how do you navigate their lack of caring? I mean, but at that point, there's some sort of trauma there too, right? Mm. They've reached some sort of wall they've put up. Can we climb over that wall? Can we put a window in that wall? I don't know. That's how I stay optimistic. You try to talk to people. You try to say, hey, we have more in common than we have that divides us. Again, child of the Obama era, right?
I was going to say, you do sound very much like a millennial.
Real hope and changey.
No.
What has surprised you since sitting in your city councilor seat?
I mean, they always say that the wheels of government are slow and you're trying to push them uphill both ways, carrying your brother in the snow. But it is that slow. It is a lot of how do we get that stamp, and then it goes to this desk, and then that person has to be. We're watching it at the legislature right now, right?
Yeah, that's,
And I am super glad not to be in that position, but that sort of minutia of making sure is oversight to a large degree, right? But when you have people coming up to you saying, I want change now.
Right.
Yeah.
Valid. Not how that works. That's kind of roughly what I said yesterday, too. Like, I would love things to happen quickly. I know we have the monies, But those monies are, like, say, for example, something's encumbered, right? We got that from some sort of legislative ask. We can't just take that money and use it for something else.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right.
Yeah.
So a lot of my, as much as I'm being educated, my role then is to be that conduit that tries to educate to the best of my ability, not always, you know, to the best of reception, to be able to have people be educated about the process as well. So
you heard, I think you heard when Daisy and I were talking in the first, the caller and the frustration that mm-hmm. she was expressing. And you hear that a lot. And the town has changed since I moved here in 2002. It's there are areas of it that don't feel as safe as it used to. And people are reacting to that in very strong and sometimes not positive ways.
Right.
Where do you come down on all of that? How do you understand what are, I think, valid? I'm not dismissing her concerns and her mm-hmm. complaints. I don't think she's making that stuff up. How do you address that while still understanding that, we just can't jail our way out of this problem, obviously, that there right. are so many services and so many overlapping areas of need that it's just very complex.
It's coordination, too. Yeah, I would say Daisy and I are both nodding as you're saying this, right? The idea that the town has changed, in what ways, right? And I think one of the things I'd heard early on is that tipping point of size, right? Mm. And things that I heard probably in my first year was, are we ever going to be like we used to be?
Hmm.
No. We are definitely a different type of town now. So we are not a town of 30,000, 40,000 people.
I remember when I moved here, tagging was the big problem.
Oh.
How are we going to stop all of this horrible tagging?
I was just saying last night, one of my professors at NMSU said, I remember when Telscher was not paved. And I'm like, whoa.
Wow.
you
win.
that's been a while. So no, it's valid because I've experienced that lack of safety. That, mm-hmm. but you grow up, you realize that things may not be as you've thought they were. But when we have things like wealth inequality, we don't have like stagnant wages. Like we don't have where's that hopelessness to a certain degree? Mm-hmm. How are we seeing that play out within the systems we have, right? We're operating to, and I brought this up at the budget retreat too, that we're tending to operate like things are normal when things are very much not normal. Things are changing in ways that we have not seen, right? We might have a roadmap from 100 years ago, but we don't have an idea of how to navigate this. Think of technology, right? We're mm-hmm. having this conversation about what does technology look like? How do we have never had that problem before. Now we do. Now we need to deal with it.
Yeah.
So,
You mentioned the budget retreat. The issue that came up recently with the overstatement, I guess, is what they're calling mm-hmm. it. Can you just talk a little bit about how that happened and what procedures will prevent it from happening in the future and what impact how are we going to address this without really cutting into vital services and taking away from housing and all mm-hmm. of these other critical parks and all these other critical areas.
Yeah, I would say that I am not a finance accounting person. You get thrown into these positions and you go, I'm going to trust that.
Oh, I get that. You're not an expert on everything.
But I would say that it sounded like there was an internal error of moving things around. So we're trying to fix that. I have asked specifically the city manager to be creative with some of the things. Like, for example, if we are going to have a hiring freeze, one of my first concerns was we are trying to hire an active transportation coordinator. What does that look like? We haven't found anyone who's either matched the qualifications, taken the job. How do we navigate that need? So the city manager came to me at our last meeting and said, we got an idea. I try not to do voices, but I will. We take that position and split it up three ways with people we already have on staff. We make it a coordinated effort so that we can actually get things done. And that's that's more where I'm at. Like, let's get the things done, right? Can we very much, you know, one of my requests was please make sure that they have a supervisor that they all report to, at least in that project, right? Make sure that they report back to city council. What is the steps they're taking to do some of these active transportation projects that have been languishing because we haven't been able to hire? Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of being right now creative with some of the asks of how can we get things done, does it?
Yeah.
I hope that kind of answers the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if I could ask about, and I kind of mentioned this a little bit too earlier, but about the GRT mm-hmm. and the city, you know, hosted several community meetings asking people, like, how do you as, you know, the constituents and the, ultimately people who are paying for this yep. Want us to spend the money and what projects? And I know that there's a big concern
yes.
that what has been voiced in the community obviously is very community-oriented projects, and yet the council seems to be going in the direction of wanting to fund what is being dubbed as Cop City.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on that?
It's interesting. I went to that meeting at the library. That's my boon of being... District 1 is that the library is mine.
Yeah, right? People can't see your friends of the yeah. library shirt that you're wearing as you're speaking to us.
Yeah, and that's who's hosting the meeting, Friends okay. of the Library. Yeah. So I was like, can I wear my shirt? Is it? But let me get back to the GRT. It was interesting to me because I'd been working on those drainage ponds, the detention ponds, and I was like trying to sell it to someone who was probably at least 15 years younger than me. And she's like, no, water's important. We have to think about what. How do we manage our water? And I was just blown away that I didn't have to sell that one specifically, right? I think when we talk about strategy, we're not doing it well. Yesterday, too, my council comments, I can't call them public comments. My council comment says that we're not talking about how we're strategizing on the back end. To a large degree, the GO bond will be the library. We're waiting to hear what kind of monies we're getting back from the state. I think a lot of the conversation for the GRT was we want to affect change, but when we do get money that, boy, I don't want to be in their shoes to divvy up $4 million or $2 million among all of the constituencies that the legislators have. And when we come with big asks of, like, we want $10 million for the library, they go, okay. And then they also love the idea of it being shovel-ready. What does shovel-ready mean? It means that the project... So. For the library this round, that was we have a lot of design things that you can help us with. And it is the most boring sort of, it's not, you're not going to be sitting at with a golden shovel digging anything up, but we do need to get to that point. So, but we don't know where their priorities are. So once we know what that coming back looks like, we'll give us an ability to say, maybe the GRT isn't working the way we want it to. Maybe we do want to fund the library to a larger degree than what has been allocated from the state. So I think the conversation at the very beginning when we were thinking about GRT is like the outcry then was public safety. And I think to a large degree, we were very flexible about what we call public safety. But we have to actually think about that was the request. And I think the mayor had said too yesterday, we did send out a survey. What are you looking for us to change? Right. And that came back as public safety, which has a very, as a writer, very variable definition depending on who you talk to.
Sure.
Right. So having a conversation about what does that look like? What does the, you know, yeah, $3 million for design. That's a rough one. What gets a place in the ground so that people aren't spending $20,000 a month renting a facility for fire? Long term, that saves money. Right. So having those conversations, what does that look like? Are we getting a driving track funded by some of our legislators? We're not 100% sure right now. I don't know if that answers your question. You can ask follow up. I tend to ramble. I'm sorry. This is why I don't like to. I'm not a pontificator in that way.
No, I mean, I guess I'm just from what I can tell, the major concern or how people voted and wanted GRTs to be spent wasn't public safety. So I guess I'm just curious where those numbers came from or where the...
I think to a large degree toward the beginning was this sort of how do we help enable training for, you know, and if the conversation was, hey, we want our police officers to be trained. We don't want to spend extra money to drive them to Santa Fe to train. That's where they're doing it right now. How do we save money on that? It's one of those fiscally, and then you're also looking at projects. We had a whole conversation about how many capital improvement projects are ongoing right now. that were in progress before a good portion of us were on council. And do we just stop? Now, where does that money go if it was, like I said earlier, encumbered? Or do we have to keep going? To a certain degree, that matters of where were those plans laid? And these are the questions I've asked, too, because we've looked at, you know, we can look at some of the plans that were made in 2020. And are we following them? Are we looking at things like, this is, I never thought this would be my crusade, but were we looking at things like tiny homes to make housing,
yeah,
right, faster? And if we're not looking at these options, right, we're not following the plans that were set back in the day. So and by council at that point. But housing glut, that's what we need, right? We need an actual measurable. When we go to root causes, we want to put people in homes, right? How can we do that faster? Does that? Yeah. I'm looking. Daisy's nodding, but I don't know if she's just agreeing in terms of, like, I'm thinking of another question, which is fine, too.
No, you're
not.
Yeah.
I did, real quickly, what are you expecting this year from capital outlay? Do you know yet what the city's going to get back from the
really
legislature?
Want drainage ponds. I mean, that's my sort of, I would love us to have the ability to start the library project meaningfully, right? Where people are going to see change. Will it be a hurdle? Yes. Will it be long? Will I see the outcome of it? No, probably not. And that's, but I think we're getting some funding for some of the bigger parks where, you know, yesterday's conversation was third spaces, right? Mm. We need to renovate some of our parks, and I think that's going to come through. I don't want to steal anybody's. I think they're going to announce all that.
Yeah.
So I've heard good things, okay. But I want to
see,
make sure.
See, we want to steal thunder all the
time. I know you do. Yeah. I know.
Caller didn't want to come on the air, but just asked about the issue of transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the council has been more or less transparent than you? That's his question. I guess the way I would put it is, what have you done to try to help improve transparency and bring more people into the process?
I love that because I'm not a, when I had my district meeting and I need to have another one established, we're going to do it this year, people came in and thought that I was going to give a speech. Don't like doing that. What I did like was going one-on-one to talk to people and then again, educate them about the process. So I'm a texter. Please text me on my work phone. I tend to ignore it after 5. I'm sorry. But trying to reach out to people and, hey, where do you not understand it? The story that I like to tell is that, you know, for example, when people were looking at the North and Main construction and they were saying, why isn't there a detour? And I said, that's a great question. Everybody left and, Public Works came up, mm-hmm, and said, because truck weight. Okay. I said, well, why didn't you say that in the meeting? Because you have everybody leave.
Right.
But the next day I had a meeting one-on-one with somebody at their kitchen table, and I said, truck weight. And she's like, oh, that's disappointing, but understandable, right?
Yeah.
We are down to our last minute. Let's remind people again about the event that you have coming up later today.
That's right. I'll be at the Brannigan Library at 1:30. Rambling on about my column, my so-called millennial life. If you are a reader or continue to be a reader, by all means, join me. Ask questions, learn about the process. Anything you'd like to hear about what writing looks like, I'm happy to share with you.